All around the world, the search for sustainable building materials continues to pick up speed. And one particular material, in some ways as old as construction itself, is growing more quickly than many others. Mass timber is driving a significant shift in how we build. It's renewable, it's low in carbon, it's efficient to build with, and it looks and even smells great. It's becoming a truly disruptive force in the construction industry. But while the advantages are many, there are still some barriers to widespread adoption. Today, we get the inside running from last week's International Mass Timber Conference in Portland, Oregon, the largest gathering of mass timber experts in the world. And we have two of those experts with us today to bring us the highlights from the conference. Erica Spiritos is based in Portland. Erica started her career as a civil engineer before becoming a mass timber specialist and is now director of the Washington Mass Timber Accelerator. Erica's working to expand mass timber regional ecosystems, and we'll talk a little bit about that in a moment. And we're also joined by Stuart Germain, Director of Innovation and Sustainability for Skanska USA Commercial Development, joining us from Seattle. Welcome both of you to Shaping Sustainable Places.
Thank you, John, for having us.
Yes, thank you. It's a pleasure.
Both of you were at last week's conference. For those of us who couldn't be there, what was it like? What was the buzz? Erica?
There's such a bond between this group, old-timers and newcomers, and such a shared sense of values that people just can't get enough of each other, it feels.
Wow.
It's really special. Wow. Yeah.
Sounds great. Stuart, your first impressions.
I've been going for several years now, and it was definitely the biggest and most well put together. It used to be a really sort of nerdy architect, structural engineer kind of conference. And now there's developers and city officials and, people with social viewpoint and sustainability. And it's very, just so broad. There's so much that you can dive into. Really inspiring to see so much variety.
Mm. Now, this is the International Timber Conference, so it's not just people from North America. So who are the participants and where are they coming from? You mentioned all these different roles, but what sort of roles are we looking at?
I mean, from the architect's point of view, there were architects from the UK there. There were suppliers from Austria, from the Nordics. And there were even manufacturers from as far away as South America represented there on the floor. It was amazing.
Great. Erica, was there one single highlight that you'd like to name?
I think the general vibe that I'm coming away with from this past week is the sense that we need to do more to accelerate mainstream adoption. You know, there's this sense of urgency. So it's no longer this question of what is mass timber or how do we do it? But the keynote speech or the keynote panel this year was on building mass timber at a district scale, you know? And so I think we're starting to have a conversation at a different level, given the sense of urgency around our housing crisis, our climate crisis. And it's exciting to see the conversation evolve to that point. So, you know, to Stuart's point, that's why we see public officials, policymakers coming to this conference, because they recognize mass timber as an integral solution to some of those challenges we're facing.
Mm. Stuart, I know when we were talking before the interview, you were saying that you'd also seen the shifting to it becoming a mature solution.
Yeah, definitely. It really feels like the industry is kind of coming together and looking to expand. It used to be sort of highlighting like these one-off projects for specific clients and specific locations, and they were special and amazing. And now the vibe I got from this conference really was, okay, we need to, let's work on solving this at a broader scale. Let's look at making this commercially viable, pushing it out to more building types, K-12 schools and office and multifamily, in particular multifamily apartment housing. Really a lot of energy around, let's find the right ways to do this so that we can expand it and spread it and get more people to understand it, be more comfortable with mass timber so that we can see more adoption and more of those benefits spread across a larger population.
Okay, the obvious question, why isn't everybody doing this? Can we get you to talk a little bit about some of the obstacles that are facing the industry?
It takes a different mindset. You can't do mass timber as business as usual. And so the more you understand that, the more you can overcome what are some of the primary hurdles, which traditionally have been either initial upfront cost or insurance or fire concerns. And those all three get solved by taking a different mindset to timber. Thinking of a timber first mindset as you go forward. You can optimize the sort of fiber content so that your structural cost doesn't go too high. You can work with your jurisdictions to make sure that they're comfortable as more code adoption comes across in more jurisdictions, in more cities and states across the U.S. That's really, I think that's kind of where I see that sort of mindset of shifting the way you think about creating buildings is really critical with mass timber.
Yeah, I hear that absolutely. And, you know, I think you're talking about what the project team can do to move closer to this mass timber future that we're all working on. And then I think there's also a role that the public sector can play in creating conditions that are supportive of mass timber construction. And then also a role that manufacturers can play to continue to drive standardization into the overall process and continue to reduce costs of mass timber relative to other types of construction. And we did hear from a number of people about the role that the public sector can play, whether it's with carbon policy or density bonuses to make mass timber projects more profitable, modernizing building codes to make it easier to permit mass timber buildings, and also like helping developers gain access to or providing opportunities for access to low-cost capital, right? Mm-hmm. Just so that we can jumpstart and catalyze construction. So I see the public sector wanting to step up and wanting to be part of advancing mass timber.
And Stuart, can I bring you in here?
I think that's totally right on. And then I think the other thing, speaking from a developer standpoint, is the experience that the customers have in the building, the occupants within the building space. That's where we're seeing a lot of interest from people who want to be in a wooden building. The smell, the just sort of natural experience. The word biophilia is used a lot, you know, meaning a connection to nature within a built space. And that we're really seeing like a lot of interest from potential tenants and long-term building owners who like want to have this different type of experience in an urban setting. And it just, you can see it's kind of infectious when you go on the tours and people like maybe for the first or second time in a timber building, their eyes get big and they start sniffing and touching the columns. And so like, it's a very sort of tactile humanistic experience, which I think is really leads to a lot of the enthusiasm.
Mm. Absolutely. You know, and I think what's interesting there for me as someone who's been kind of part of this conversation for the last decade is like, how do we move from anecdotal evidence of the value of mass timber, you know, these stories that you're talking about, to quantitative data, you know, and a larger scale to help investors feel confident investing in mass timber buildings and developers feel confident making that choice to move forward with mass timber on their projects. I still don't think we're there yet.
Stuart, your thoughts?
I mean, I think from the sustainability perspective as a whole, it's hard to quantify some of those soft attributes. And we see the same conversations with, we should have increased daylighting, or, you know, we should have more walkability, or some of these things that, you know, there's studies of how different building environments can increase productivity or, you know, add to higher sort of employee satisfaction or whatnot. But there's not, to your point, there's not enough of them to really sort of say this is true, or just because it's not like direct facts. It's hard to get investors sometimes and developers over the hurdle to like really see that value. It's a little bit easier when you start talking about like embodied carbon savings or biogenic carbon that's, you know, locked away in the building for the life of the project and things like that have direct metrics, and those often speak to the audiences like a little bit more directly. But I do think I was really inspired by the panel that I went to on circularity and deconstruction, thinking along similar lines, you know, of like, how can we think about these buildings not just for the occupants during the, you know, 50 or 75 or 100 years that the building's in use, but then when the building is done, how do we take it apart and reuse it so that we're like eliminating the need to send stuff to the landfill, that we're not like making it extra hard. There were some amazing like quick disconnect connectors for post to beam column connections and stuff like that. A little technical, a little nerdy, but really exciting to think, oh, you just put this in, turn the lever and the building, you know, the column comes right off and you can truck it away and use it somewhere else. Like super inspiring.
One thing, Erica, that you mentioned at the start was about the role that the public sector can play here. And I'm guessing the US, you've got all the different states with different legislations there. And also in Europe, of course, we've got lots of different legislatures across the EU. What about standardization and things like that? You were saying that some, you know, in some places they've got it. They understand how this works. But is that spreading?
You know, I think standardization is a conversation that we're starting to have. And the conversation is motivated by two different sides. You know, it's the project team wanting to have more clarity on the design process and wanting to have better handle on the products that they're designing with and not feel like if they choose one manufacturer, they're leaning into one design, and then if they have to change directions and work with another manufacturer, they'd have to redo their entire structural system. But then it's also the manufacturers who benefit from standardization as well. You know, I think one of the hard truths right now is that the manufacturing industry in North America is operating at under 50% capacity. And part of that has to do with the fact that it's hard to bring bespoke custom projects through an industrial process, right? It takes a lot of time. We often talk about the speed of installation, right? Or this kit of parts assembly, and we forget to honor the immense human effort to transform architectural design intent into fabrication level information, which then allows this manufacturing process to unfold and occur, right? And that process would become less time intensive the more we standardize designs, products, systems. And I do believe that leaning into standardization, maybe not for all products, for all projects, we're always going to have the bespoke, you know, the libraries, the museums, the, right? But leaning into that process to some degree, especially for housing, will benefit both the project teams and the manufacturers.
You both, yeah. Go ahead, Stuart.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, on the standardization of practices piece, I see, like, we're starting to figure out, there's starting to be some consistency in, you know, if it's a point-supported multifamily, it's often sort of this column spacing and this sort of size of column or beam or CLT panel. And the same thing with, like, if it's a post and beam office building. There's starting to be a coming together. I think it's taken time for the industry to mature to sort of understand, like, where those optimum points are. But, yeah, the idea of having a little bit more consistency across the manufacturing realm would be helpful for the designers and construction estimators and therefore the developers as well, because right now as it is, you start making decisions for architectural or internal reasons and then all of a sudden you look around, you've cut out half your possible sort of manufacturers because you're just a little bit too wide here or a little bit too short there or whatever it is. So like trying to get more consistency there I think would be super helpful. And that's one thing that I think we're seeing. The European manufacturers have a ton of sophistication, a ton of digital manufacturing and experience that is really informing the domestic market here, the North American, U.S. and Canadian suppliers and manufacturers. And I think that's one of the things that's kind of puts timber again in a global context. There was definitely undercurrents and, you know, side conversations about supply chain and tariffs and other things like that of like a very topical concern. But at the same time, there was a lot of momentum like, hey, we're doing what's right. We're sticking to our values. We're going to continue to go forward with what we believe in, and we'll be fine. We'll get through it.
Stuart, I like that. Erica, can I bring you in here? How are you thinking around this?
I think the one caveat there, the one nuance, is that in Europe they're working with one wood species, right, across almost the entire continent, European spruce, and mass timber likely won't look the same across the United States, because forests don't look the same across the United States. And it's easier to swap one CLT panel for another. We're building with 2x6s. But when we talk about a glulam frame, which you know, constitutes 40% of most post and beam, you know, structures, the 40% of the timber, you know, the size of a southern yellow pine column or beam is going to necessarily be different than the size of a Douglas fir beam or the size of a, you know, a spruce beam coming from the eastern, you know, from the northeast. And so that just creates a challenge, right? So it'll be interesting to see how we standardize. I think having more than one supplier in each region will help us, right? If we can have a competitive bidding environment just within our region, that will benefit us immensely. Instead of feeling like we go out to bid, we get three responses, they're all three different wood species, and then three potentially different structural designs. I mean, that is just, talk about risk, right? That's really challenging. That said, I am really excited about some new design tools that are entering the market right now, and we did hear about them during the keynote on Thursday. The branch tool that StructureCraft has just come out with, the Generate tool, these are software products that will rapidly accelerate the rate at which we are assessing the viability of mass timber for our projects. And these tools are embedded with all of the products, all the mass timber products, manufacturer specific, you know, that are made across the continent. And I think many of them even incorporate European products as well. They allow project teams to easily compare and analyze different structural grid layouts, different wood species, different loading criteria, different manufacturers, and understand the quantity implications and then therefore the cost implications of those different systems, and to be able to do that in real time without having to spend hours, you know, in weeks really going back to the drawing board and iterating on a design or iterating on, you know, these systems is incredible. I mean, that's incredibly powerful for the industry. So I'm excited to see how those technologies are adopted and if they yield a greater uptake of mass timber really across the continent.
I think it's a great point, Erica, and thinking about the sort of digital tools, that is one thing that's, I don't know if it's ironic, but it's interesting that such a natural building material benefits so strongly from a highly digitized sort of machine learning-based process, right? Because you want to, like you just said, you want to go through all of these different sort of scenarios and testing, and there's engineering calcs and supply calcs and all these sort of data points that you need to use to make your decision. And the best way to do that quickly is with, you know, a good software platform with some machine learning or AI power behind it to sort of help navigate all of the choices and narrow it down to a way so that the project team can get to the right solution, or the city that's doing a code evaluation, or the jurisdiction, or like whatever it is. But the digital processes really do help facilitate the sort of natural building material.
Is this coming back, Stuart, to the mass timber is now mature? It's not something new. It's not a novelty. It's established, and therefore it is developing this ecosystem, not just around supply and so on, but also around the tools for using it.
I'm hesitant to use that word mature because I actually think that the curiosity that is at the core of our early stage of evolution is critical. And we want to maintain that curiosity as long as possible.
Yeah,
and I think, you know, we still need to see more efficiency in the supply chain. We would benefit immensely from having access to lamella that are, you know, lumber laminations. It's different thicknesses than just the standard 2x, right? And we're seeing manufacturers in Washington have a really hard time still competing against the Europeans, even in their own backyard. And why is that? Because the Europeans can deliver a 150-millimeter panel, 5-ply panel, and in North America, we'd be hard-pressed to do that. We're delivering a 175-millimeter panel at best, and that extra 25 millimeters costs us a lot of money and ultimately, you know, takes that manufacturer out of the running cost-wise. So we have a long ways to go still, but I'm extremely encouraged by the Mass Timber Conference because it's a reminder of the thousands of people in our community who are working on these challenges every day, and I do believe we'll get there. And it's really an amazing gift to our industry that we all get to come together once a year and struggle together and learn from each other and celebrate our accomplishments, because they are, you know, they are immense and meaningful. But yes, I think we still have a long ways to go.
Okay. Not mature, but starting to grow up.
Absolutely. Starting to grow up, for sure.
Okay. I understand there was quite some discussion about the importance of not just building faster with the modularity, but also building taller.
Yeah, definitely. There is a lot of excitement that I experienced at the Mass Timber Conference. One of the sessions that I went to was on using mass timber in a hybrid structural system, where you're incorporating like steel and or concrete to also be able to build to taller heights, which follows necessarily after building code adoption. And it, typically, you know, you can do it without building code adoption, but that's a little bit more complicated as it is. But yeah, looking for building taller timber buildings is a real opportunity, I think, to expand the market adoption in the overall sort of spread of mass timber buildings. I mean, here in the Seattle market, we're in the design process for a 12-story mass timber hybrid office building that's cruising along right now. And we're really enjoying that the prospect of designing, bringing an office building of that size to market, and we're getting a lot of early feedback from potential tenants and people in the market who would be just love to set up their corporate headquarters or come be in this office space like this and set up shop in this type of building, and being able to get above the you know, more typical like 3 to 5 stories to get to the 12 stories or even higher range is really a game changer for us.
Exciting times.
Yeah, and you know, the opportunity that you're talking about really is benefiting or relying on the adoption of 2024 building codes, right, which allow for the exposed timber up to 12 stories in height. So a great reminder of the importance of modernizing our building codes and not just kind of sitting back and accepting that we're still operating under 2015 IBC in some parts of the country. So that leadership on the public side is really critical.
If I can just wrap up a little bit, we've heard about the amazing value that mass timber is bringing, both for the people who are inside these buildings, but also for the people who are investing them, whether it comes to locking in carbon or the feeling of walking through an amazing building with this exposed timber. We've also talked about some of the journeys that we're going on with public policy, with supply chains, but also new tools and processes and not just physical tools, but digital tools that are helping us move this further so that the technology is not maturing, but growing up. Thank you to Erica Spiritos and Stuart Germain, giving us their reflections from the International Mass Timber Conference last week.
Fantastic.
Awesome.
If you have any comments on this episode or on the podcast in general, please reach out to us on Skanska's LinkedIn account or by emailing to podcast@skanska.com. That's all for this episode. We'll be back again soon. I'm John Ambrose, and this is Shaping Sustainable Places.